sinners, choosers, lovers, dreamers, hypocrites, and cynical bastards all around the world, welcome to Choose Your Own Religion. My name is Joe. Thank you once again for tuning in. This is the show where, if you haven't heard it before, we talk about whatever religion we grew up with. If we did, talk about any kind of spiritual path we're on, even though sometimes I hate the word spiritual because it's such a cop-out to just describe a blanket, anything. It's kind of like mysticism, which it just makes it sound very vague, but we try to get down to some nitty-gritty spiritual concepts. We try to talk about practical stuff, and then if my guest doesn't have a religion that they currently practice, then we make up a brand new one right on the spot. I'm really excited about this week. I'm going to keep this intro short. Sometimes I go on rants about gratitude or sexuality or Easter, even when it's not Easter. But sometimes all an episode calls for is just a little bit of context, and that's it. And that's all this episode calls for. I'm really excited to have my guest on this week. I'm happy that you guys are going to get to meet one of my recent mentors, my biggest improv mentor, Joel Spence. And Joel is somebody who I've spent a lot of time with, and especially in 2015. It's really cool to hear more of his life story and to talk about a lot of this stuff that I had a suspicion he had some opinions on, and he really did. And when he's not teaching improv, Joel's also an actor, director. He's currently on HBO's Big Little Lies and on the new ABC digital series, Boondoggle. And so you should definitely check those out if you have HBO Now. Or you can also just go to abc.com and find Boondoggle to find that show. And I love this episode. We talk about Zen and improv and ego, therapy, exercise, meditation. Even you too gets a mention. We got a lot of good shit in here. I really like doing it. I'm glad Joel came out. If you like the show, you can find more of the old shows on the Facebook page, Choose Your Own Religion, ChooseYourOwnReligion.com, Twitter also, Google Play. You can subscribe there, Stitcher and iTunes. Subscribe there. I would love a rating or review if you have time, but if not, I totally get it. Hey, listen, I personally don't leave a lot of ratings and reviews, but I don't know why I don't. It's like an easier way of voting and way more fun than whatever we're going to have to vote for in 2016. Way easier, too, by the way. Even though I did love voting in the primaries, it's just a tenth of a mile for me, but I still had to put on pants. I still had to walk outside. I still had to say hello and actually meet members of my community. You don't have to do any of that. You can just go on to iTunes and hit a little button and say 5 stars. Or you can say, this sucks. But if not, that's totally cool. I'm truly just glad you're listening because this is truly my favorite thing I do. And it's only relevant because you guys are listening. So thank you so much. Again, I told you this intro is short. I'm keeping to that word. Listen to the way of Joel Spence.
Allow the soothing music and uplifting affirmations to center your heart and mind in an awareness of God's love.
Wake up, my dear sinners. Wake up from your deep rest. Won't you say your prayers and know that you are blessed. I love you, oh, but Jesus loves you the best. And I hope that you choose your own religion.
This is the cockiest thing I'll say all day, but like, and I mean, you may have, I think a lot of people in the comedy world who have grown up and before they get to a comedy theater, they think they're usually the funniest person in the room.
Right.
And I'm not talking about like in a comedy theater or at a club, you're like whenever you're hanging out with your family or whatever,
yeah.
But it's great, it's scary, but you get to UCB and you realize, oh, I'm not the funniest person in the room.
Yeah.
And I think that's, improv has really, really helped just the spirit of yes anding.
Yeah.
Regardless of your judgment, like the spirit of yes anding, I think makes like everything go smoothly.
Totally.
So if that's a religion, I'll go with that religion.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's, I guess to sort of maybe start diving in on this stuff. So
yeah.
Obviously the way I know you is you're my teacher for a couple levels, I think two or three, two levels.
Yeah.
And then through boot camps and stuff. So basically you saw me at my shittiest. Still shitty, but now that was my shittiest.
Do you have like a, when you look back, do you go, oh God?
Or, oh yeah, constantly. Really? I mean, but I do that with all aspects of my life,
sure,
really.
Yeah.
Like every 6 months to a year, I'll look back to what I was doing 6 months to a year ago and be like, oh my God.
Yeah, that's good though. I mean, that's better than being blind and there actually is no progress.
You know? Yeah, but I think it's, I'm curious about, what, so you, how much improv do you teach right now?
I'm always just slightly more than I should, I think. I teach two classes a week at UCB and then an average of three boot camp sessions a week.
Yeah.
So that's each a 2-hour session. So 12 hours roughly a
yeah.
week, which you, when you look at it, it's not, it's a less than a part-time job, right?
Right.
That amount of hours. But the, you're, when you're teaching improv most of the time, and I've flirted with the opposite, but most of the time you are on tilt just watching and paying attention, because if you miss anything, you have to do the best you can so you can help. If you stop paying attention, you,
yeah.
after the scene is done, you feel sort of helpless on what to say.
Sure.
So, and believe me, there have been times when I've been teaching way more than 12 hours a week where I have drifted and caught myself like going, oh, I got to go to the bank after this. Or, and yeah. then I snap back and I've missed something in the scene, which
yeah.
would be helpful for me to point out and all that. So, that's a long answer to the question. It's like 12 hours roughly
yeah.
a week, and it does feel, you do feel it.
Yeah, and you've been doing that for a while now,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah. 10 years.
So like, man, so that's so cool to me that like there's what I mean, God, this sounds like such a generic like Larry King softball question.
That's okay.
But like what do you get something out of the teaching, like through seeing students progress, through like having this sort of like mentor type relationship with people, or?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I never thought I'd enjoy, this is another thing where you, like, growing up, you think one way and then you discover something just kind of arrives and you discover something else.
Mm-hmm.
Like, thinking I was the funniest person in the room and then realizing, oh, I'm not that anymore.
Right.
I never really wanted to teach anything
huh.
growing up. And I don't know. I think maybe it was my relationship with teachers, or it was just how it's like every fifth or it's probably more than that. Every eighth teacher meant something huge to me,
oh,
and all
yeah.
the other ones were just sort of there and
fine.
Kind of, yeah, they were fine. Yeah.
And then every eighth was, there might have been one at every eighth that was like awful or like,
yes,
oh, fuck that person.
Yeah, 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 yeah. and so I also, I felt that I would never be as good as those,
mm-hmm.
that eighth of like that great
right.
Teacher. And
right.
I was also so, I don't know, I would watch the other teachers and I'd be like, it doesn't seem so fun to me. So this came around and, you know, to be frank, it was a practical decision.
Yeah.
It was income. And I felt it was right when I started to feel like, oh, I have discovered this whole world and it's really exciting to me. I would like to teach it. So from the beginning, it's been a real fun, satisfying part of my life to see students discover how funny they can be in this particular context, and I love it all the time. I love when people discover that they're into it and they never realized they were, because we sometimes see
yeah.
students that just take it because the agent told them to, or
right.
or they just to get them out of their shell, and they discover that they're that they have a passion for it and that they also are adept at it. They actually can accomplish things, and
yeah,
and that can happen late. It can happen over one class, and that's always it's really fun. And like for what a, it's such a healthy thing for anybody to laugh for most of the time, and it's still on balance I'm laughing more than cringing, because I think
yeah.
even with I never really cringe. It's like, well, sometimes I do, but it's more endearing failing. So yeah, I get to see that a lot.
That's cool. I definitely feel like, I've never thought about this before, but I feel like it definitely takes an improviser to be able to teach improv just in the spirit sense. Like, I don't think like a veteran like stand up or something who's like kind of cynical and bitter could like stomach like a lot of bad improv.
Yeah, that's a good point. And because I started teaching right when I did, I probably was teaching earlier than I should have, but like it sort of was right at that moment where I was loving it, and so I never got. There are times where I roll my eyes as subtly as I can mostly because of it's students that are, I feel like they, I don't know, it's there's got to be some exhaustion going on with my own self, but with just teaching a lot, but it's students that are trying to prove something as opposed to discover something. For the most part, that is there's still an endearing quality to that, because they're trying and they're nervous and all that, but there are some students every once in a while that are defiantly trying to prove something. Come on.
Totally. And like, this is where something, so I know there's like a, I don't know how many of my like audience that listens to this, like there's a certain chunk of them that have never taken improv, don't really know much about improv, but they've heard me talk about it on here, and like they've heard like the cult like sort of like spiritual ish stuff that we talk about. But that kind of what you just said sort of speaks to what I think is what makes such good improv, is getting your ego. Everybody getting their egos out of the way makes for the best sets, it seems like.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're trying to prove something, that's your little, as a performer, that's your little ego taking control.
Yeah.
Or when you're like being too shy, when you're being too reserved.
Yeah,
and you're,
that's
like,
ego too, right?
Yeah, it all, I think it all is.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, yeah. There, we just had DCM last weekend, which is the big, it's called the Del Close Marathon, which is the big improv festival. You know about it, but for the listeners.
Thank you.
So it's like a 72-hour improv festival in New York. And I had six shows, which is sort of a moderate amount of shows, because and more than I usually do. But two of them were great, and the middle... maybe I had five shows. The middle, six. One, two, three, four, five. So I had five shows, and the middle three weren't that great. And I think it was ego based. It was, and mostly fear.
Yeah.
Based.
Because ego doesn't have to be a nefarious, like trying to fuck other people over per se. It's just.
No, it's, it's insecurity. It's, I'm not worthy. And once you start doing that, then you're not paying attention anymore.
Yeah. Now, how much of like your teaching do you feel like, cause there is there's just a lot of technical stuff you do have to learn through the levels. And there's, I think mastering the technical aspects, would help you kind of get out of your head and get out of your ego for sure. But how much of it do you think, is there an element when you're teaching, is it just pure about like building chemistry and camaraderie and making people feel comfortable in their own skin and being themselves?
Yeah. I mean, I do say this from time to time, and I don't teach 101s anymore, but I used to, but where most everybody, and this is, there's obviously exceptions to the rule, but people already know how to do this. Because they've been, this is at the basic level. If you can have a conversation with somebody, you can improvise.
Right.
So it's just, it's stripping away all the stuff that comes into your head when you cross that proscenium to walk on the stage, or to like from the audience to the stage. And all of this noise starts going in your head. And that's why we say a lot that it's like, it's reps as opposed to reps with feedback, but it's reps that are really going to take the day.
Yeah.
And the more reps you do, the less that noise is, or the volume of that noise starts to lessen. And you're then you reach that point where it's just like you're hanging out with your friends on stage.
Yeah.
And you're just as funny as you are on stage as you would be if you're hanging out in the kitchen with your buddies sharing a beer.
That's cool. Yeah, it's almost like sometimes I think in my own personal growth of as far as it goes with improv, maybe in life too, but like feels like the less I give a fuck, the better.
yeah.
Like however it takes you to give just less of a shit.
Yeah.
Because man, I think, and you've seen, okay, so this is another thing that you have this opportunity as a teacher. You saw with me and with other people, it's like you when you see people fail over and over and over and over and over and then some more again, I think you really do see a vulnerable part of themselves. You do see how they handle that failure and what's, I mean, can you feel like you see like the differences between like what's going on in somebody's head when they like, when somebody's bombing on stage and like, I don't know.
I don't mention this enough to the students, but I also, I do, this is the endearing part of this. Like There are so many people in this world would never consider taking an improv class.
Yeah.
And that's the majority of the world, I would bet. And then there's a small portion that would consider taking an improv class. All right. And then, but they never do it. But there's the smaller group in that group that says, I think I'm going to do this or I'm going to do this, and they sign up. And that, to me, is so courageous that with failure, I see, particularly if you're able to handle it with, and I know you're saying, like, don't give a fuck, but it's, there's, that shouldn't be misunderstood with not caring.
Right.
And I know that's not what you mean. It's being able to roll with failure and having that being accepting that that's part of this. This is an essential part of.
Yeah.
And I try to say that to the students that like I'm dealing with that with every show, that there are moments that don't work. And, it's only when I see students over a long period of time that I've taught for years that I start to question if they're doing the right thing now. Mm. Where is it good for you to get notes on a daily basis?
Yeah.
Is it healthy for you? Is it healthier for you? And I wouldn't be presumptuous to tell them what to do with their lives, but I sometimes wonder, like, maybe if it's taking a break would be the healthier thing, so that you can, because I can start to sense that they've lost their love for it.
Yeah.
And that's sort of a bummer to find out. And they can quickly rekindle that. They can find it again within a week. But I think having that sense of adventure, even if it's small, is crucial.
It's crucial, man. Yeah. And it was crucial. I mean, I did a break with stand-up that involved taking a lot of improv for kind of that reason. I had kind of gotten grounded down. I'd gotten a little bit too cynical. I'd lost my joy for it. And then taking a pretty long break from it, I was able to come back. I mean, some of it is just like also growing up into a more well-rounded person with more life experiences. Mm-hmm. So I'm still in my 20s, so it's like I still don't have that much to say compared to somebody who's 10 years older than me.
I hear you. You do, but I hear you.
No, I mean, yes and no.
Yeah, but I know.
It's like, again, every 6 months to a year, I'm like, oh my God, I didn't know shit about shit.
Yeah.
I'm curious because something, you dropped this. Now, I don't know. I came in with no idea what your religious background was, but you did drop a couple things in class that made me wonder. And I don't want to speculate too much, but you do sometimes drop like a Zen quote or like you name check Zen as something that, I don't know, I can't even remember the specific references, but just referencing it as a note or a Zen saying or referencing it. Is Zen something that you have earnestly studied at all or like dabbled in, or is it just more of those like
I, it's It's probably whatever you were about to finish that sentence with, which is that's the one thing. If of all the religious study,
mm-hmm.
That's the one that makes the most sense to me. And that's the one that it has like a direct, there's probably a term for this in religious studies where I'm sure there is. What does exalt mean? Is that that's too big of a word for what I'm talking about, but is it?
You mean exalting yourself in terms of exalting yourself or raising yourself up or something? Or
no, I guess I'm thinking about that feeling of awakening.
Yeah, Sartori is the word they use in Zen, actually.
Sartori, okay. Yeah. Is that just connecting to the study or the lesson? Or
no, not, okay, yeah, not necessarily.
Please, yeah, please.
Sartori, that's the sort of like this instantaneous, it's kind of like, for lack of a better word, it's instant enlightenment, but just in the sense of like that split second feeling when you realize like your hands are hands and they're like not you,
okay.
or like, oh shit, like, you have lost your sense of self, or like, where's my head? Oh shit, I don't know where my head is. So that's like that.
I see. Okay.
But as far as the connection goes, no, that's not. Exactly,
yeah. Is there a word for that, or there might be?
I don't know. I don't know per se, but I know something that for what we're basically talking about is that sense of spirituality. Is
yeah.
That connection to that
makes a lot of sense to me. And it is mind correcting in a way. Or stripping. I don't know what the actual
thing is.
But it helps for those who get who go to church, I would imagine, and get there's a word. I don't know, it's like it's not solitude, but it's like anyway, like they get a let's call it a connection. A connection.
Mm-hmm.
Like I get that when I start to read. Very dumbed down Zen.
Uh-huh.
Like the book of what is the most well known.
Well,
there's a lot.
For Taoism, which is kind of similar to Zen, it's the Tao Te Ching.
Yeah, that's too complex for me.
Yeah.
It's
like, man, that book. I love that book, but it is very esoteric, and you can basically read anything into it, which I think is kind of by design. It's very like airy language and very vague.
I do respond to there's an occasional podcast that I will listen to that I can't, and it's been a while, but or I will go to there's a Buddhist temple near where I live, mm-hmm. and I've gone a couple of times to listen to. I'm gonna call him the guy, guru guy. Speak, and he's great. And so I guess to answer your question, like that is the one that I do kind of go, oh, that makes a lot of sense. And there's also it just happens to have applicable, connection to improv,
right? Yeah,
a whole lot, and a lot of it is just dealing with the stress of failing.
Exactly, the whole idea of acceptance.
I
mean, accepting failure in the moment as it's happening,
uh-huh.
not delaying your like, not saying like, okay, I'll accept this when I get home and drink or whatever.
Yeah, and going back to what we were talking about before, it's not trying to prove, it's just being in the moment and letting everything happen.
Right.
And being knowing when to, because I would imagine that Zen is not about, they're not saying that you have to be comatose for the entire day.
No, not at all.
Even meditation is good for you, but the idea is to keep your brain healthy so that you can accomplish all the tasks.
Right.
And so if you're in that state of openness, acceptance, and positivity and connection with everybody, you're not losing your sense of humor. You're not losing your instincts.
Right.
You're actually getting there. There's more direct line to them.
Totally. Yeah. And what's funny is like, so we like Zen, there's a couple different, I guess, flavors of Zen. The one that we think of in the West is like the one you're talking about of like the sort of, it mixes men really closely directly with Buddhism, and it's sort of like, Buddhism, but with even less words, more sitting.
Yeah.
What's cool is like thinking, there's a historical Zen that we're talking like the original dudes who were sort of at a, they were actually kind of fed up with Buddha. It was like the extreme version of that, where they didn't necessarily even believe in sitting or any kind of spirit, like higher, like spirituality. Yeah. They were just like, they were calling bullshit on like everything that they saw. And there was like a lot of, there's like a huge sense of humor in that. Like there's instances of like a guy like cutting a cat in half to make prove a point and shit like that.
What happened to these guys?
Yeah. Not going to give any more context other than you just cut a cat. You just saw a cat and wanted to cut it. So, I mean, do you meditate or anything at all? Or?
From time to time. Yeah. I don't make it a night. I know I should. I'm always chasing being a better meditator. But,
oh, me too.
I have it all set up. I've got the apps, and I do from, like, I would say once a month I will set aside some time. And always with the desire of just, like, this is personal, but like just like getting a massage. I don't know why that's like where I go, why don't I buy myself that on a more routine basis?
Yeah, yeah.
Why don't I meditate on a more routine basis? And that's important questions.
I mean, no, man, that's the one that always gets me. It's like, it's always, because meditation, it almost feels like working out for your brain, but like in the sense that you know it's good for you.
Yes.
You feel the immediate benefits when you do it. At least for me, I do.
Right.
And like, especially the daily, when I do it daily, which I'm currently, this past week or two, I've not been doing it. But like, when you're doing it daily, you're like, oh, cool. Yeah. I'm making progress. Like even in your day-to-day life, you're like, oh yeah, I can handle that.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, I get cocky or something, or I'm like, ah, this morning I can skip. And then the next morning I skip, and then I spend an extra, I mean, all I'm doing with my time is just spending another 15 minutes on fucking Facebook.
Yeah.
It's not that I have that many great things to do.
It's the same brain mechanism that is telling me, if I want to go work out, it's just too far in the car.
Right.
And with meditation... It's the same thing, but you're talking yourself out of doing something that you can do right there without any prep.
Right. And you're inventing like all this cascade of consequences. Like, well, if I go work out and I don't have time, then I won't have time to do this. And then I won't have time to do that.
Yeah.
And then you're just editing out all the bullshit that you're wasting.
I go to a therapist. I've recently started going to a therapist and it's not routine, but it's like once every 3 weeks or so. And
that's what I'm looking to do too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah.
We talk about anything, but like one of the things we've talked about is exercise and how that's just a sort of a no brainer.
Mm-hmm.
And he asked me, and I'm still trying to figure out the concreteness of this, but he was asking me, when you start to exercise, when do you start feeling good? When do you start feeling the benefits, that high or whatever? Like, when do you start to feel good? And he said, like, his point was, it's usually less time into it than you think.
Yeah.
So if the struggle to get to exercise is really only 7 minutes, then that's the only bad part. And is it really bad? And if you get pushed through that 7 minutes, you will, then I've told them over and over again, I've never felt bad, like aside from injury, I've never felt bad after an exercise. That's a guaranteed lift in a day, right?
Yeah, totally, yeah.
So why don't I, that's a different question.
It's so weird. And then for me, I totally relate to that. And then for me, it's like the opposite with like maybe drinking or smoking weed or something. It's like, how long am I really going to enjoy this? Probably 7 minutes.
Yes, it's the 7. Yeah, that's the exactly.
The first 7, and then I'm gonna hate it.
Yeah, then I'll have another one, and it's not that fun anymore. It's not, you don't have that high, whatever that sort of natural, well, chemical or whatever it is, high, and now it's you're doing just a chore or something like that.
just all in regret. Just total regret the rest of the way.
Yeah.
It's so weird how that,
I think Zen works. Also handles what I hunt for in Zen is the release of shame.
Yes.
Which I don't know. I bet there are Western religions that have that too, but it's hard to find those in Western I would imagine. Like, you might know that more than I do.
Yeah, I mean, well, here's... This is, like, one of the problems. Even with, like... Okay, so my dad's a pastor, hence, like, sort of the impetus for me starting his podcast. He's a Presbyterian minister. Presbyterians are pretty liberal, pretty cool Christians as far as far as branches of Christians go.
Yeah.
And pretty light on the shame, pretty damn light on the guilt. Didn't really talk about hell, really, ever. Yeah. But there was, like, a... I mean, and this is where...
Does hell exist for Presbyterians?
I don't even think, I think honestly, a lot of them would say no. A lot of them would say yes. I don't.
Yeah.
Honestly, it's just really not talked about that much.
Yeah.
But so we had like a weekly, time for confession, as they call it. Like it's, but it's like a group. We're all reading the same text. And then there's like a silent moment where you silently think of like things you've done in the past week.
Yeah.
And I'm not, you know, I wouldn't even say that's all in all a bad thing. Like I have things that I should apologize for. Yeah. I have things that I fuck up every day, every week. Yeah. But at the same time, yeah, it's hard not to feel like I'm indebted to somebody else or somebody else. Like there is like a, almost a baseline guilt or shame sort of baked into that, that, that is unsettling.
Yeah. And that's down to at least how my brain works, which is not a well-running machine, but it's, it can be down to the smallest of things that I will,
oh yeah,
go, ah, damn it. And it'll, it won't like fester, but it'll just be there.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean?
My favorite from my childhood is, and I've said this before. So I was like 9 years old, 8 or 9 years old. My best friend at the time, Jeffrey Paffenbeck, was, moving away from North Carolina to Georgia. Probably would never see him again. And, he had one last night in town where he was like packing up stuff at his house and I was at my house, and I had to, if I wanted to go play with him, I had to go to his house. But I had just gotten the new board game Tailspin, which is based off of a shitty like Disney TV show. And little old 8 year old me decided to stay home and not, and play with Tailspin and not play with Jeffrey Paffenbeck, my best friend at the time. And that's something. And I'm like, why the fuck did I do that?
Well,
and 20 years later.
And do you do you have an answer?
No, because that was a really bad board game.
Yeah.
I mean,
Is it possible that there was something that you weren't ready to do, which was to say goodbye to your friend?
Maybe. I like that version of that.
Well, I think that's real. I think that's like that's real. That makes sense to me. Like, if it doesn't have to be the truth of it, like you could be just like, you wanted to play a board game, which is also just fine. But I can make those decisions based on a fear of confronting something.
Yeah. I mean, that's not, that wouldn't be absurd, because I do have that fear as well.
And there's no shame in that. It's just one of those learning experiences. Maybe that's the way to, I don't know, exercise that demon, is that
the shame.
You're doing the best you can.
we're all doing the best we can. Right. So did you grow up with any kind of like religious based shame or anything? Or? I've got a bunch of it in stock.
Yeah, the my parents, my mom came from a Lutheran background, and her parents were really Iowa or Nebraska Lutheran farming stock. Now, her father was a teacher, taught mostly in Lutheran schools, from what I remember. And he taught psychology, which was made it like whenever I would think about that, because he was very judgmental on most of his children that grew up in the 60s and were rebellious towards Lutheranism, which was like not the most intense of the of the Christian religions, I would say. But he was kind of a dick about it. And so I think mom had a reaction to that. Now, a reaction to being a dick about it. That's what she had a reaction to. But I think she was she died in 99, but she had a very, there was a soft spot in her for church, for hymns in particular, and the solace.
Yeah.
Is that the word? That's common.
That's a good word. Yeah.
The that some of the Christian lessons provided, and towards the end of her life, I think she relied upon that a great deal. Now, my dad, and we for some, like, maybe that's just part of some old traditions, like my brother and I were Episcopalian because mm-hmm. of my dad being an Episcopalian, and we were confirmed, my brother and I, and right, that's the term, right? Mm-hmm. And had communion, and I got a pen from my grandma, like a nice pen. But there was only a three to four year period mm-hmm. at most that we went to church regularly. Mm. And you would have thought on Sunday mornings that, or I'm surprised that they didn't think that they were raising devil children because of how much we protested going to church. Mm. And I was thinking about that today because I knew that it was going to come up. I was wondering what I couldn't, like, now looking back, it's such a small portion, like it's the 7 minute rule. Like, how much
right.
do you really have to sit through that's excruciating? It's not. It's just like an hour. Mm-hmm. 15 at the, like, we're lucky we're not Catholic or like for any sort of long.
Yeah, some Baptists go like 3 hours or something crazy.
And I think we just didn't like, it was the weekend as a kids that you just feel are so more precious than they actually are. Mm. And dressing up is such a drag for kids.
Yeah.
And because we had not done it up until that point, we were like 8 and 10 to 10 and 12, mm-hmm. or maybe it was like later for whatever age you get confirmed. It seemed like such a weird thing that we were doing at that time.
Oh yeah.
Because out of, not necessarily out of nowhere, but it was like, well, we're going to go to church. And my dad later told me, which is still I'm baffled by, is that, cause this was years later, and we were talking about how much of a how much dicks we were, just going like, no, I don't want to go to church. Okay. And then we would make them late and all that stuff.
Uh-huh.
And I probably was saying, I'm sorry for what we were. And he said that we took you to church, you and your brother, because we wanted to expose you to it so you wouldn't either go ballistic for religion or ballistic anti-religion.
Yeah.
Which is such a... Which makes total sense, but it's also such a parenting thing to do. Like, it's a, we're gonna do this the right way. And the next, like, beat of that is teaching the birds and the bees of sex to us is that my dad was a physician. My mom was a registered nurse when they met, so they both mm-hmm. came from the medical field, very clinical. They had great senses of humor, but their approach to teaching us sex was this book that was like the Tao, the book that we were talking about, that is so, like, there's nothing sexy about it. Not that this should be sexy. It is just almost like you don't want to ever have sex because it just seems like a bunch of sentences in a row and there's no feeling to it. And it was so, it wasn't until I saw my first, porn film that I was like, oh, that's what happens. That was it. It was like 5 seconds of going, oh, okay, now I get
cool.
it. Yeah, cool. I didn't know the body could do that. But that was their MO was to expose us to church to get us confirmed so that we wouldn't really be insane. Now, there was an interesting thing that happened in middle school for me, which was one of those years mm-hmm. when we were going to church, I went to a Christian camp with a bunch of friends that we were all growing up together. And they had, like, a lot of our friends were much more Christian and much more, like, raised in that way. They were from Texas, and they were kind of like, that was the, it was hard to find people that weren't.
Oh yeah.
And, I went to a Christian camp, had a great time. It was like, you know, canoeing and archery and all that stuff, and it'd be mm-hmm. twice a day, I believe it was twice a day, at least once a day, going to a service of some mm-hmm. sort. And it was all right and whatever. And quite a few years later, I'm probably getting all the timeline wrong, but I know it was in middle school, these friends and I went to that camp one summer, and this was years later, they were still going to that camp. And I had a real big crush on this girl who was going to that camp. And I said, well, I'm going. And so I think it bewildered my parents. And they were like, you want to go? And I said, yeah, I want to go. And went. And I took to religion. I took to Christianity. I took to the less. I took to the lessons that you had to learn. And,
yeah.
I didn't know. I also got really into the band U2, and that, like, one of the things that
me too.
Yeah, yeah.
Back, not no pun intended, but back when I was 13, 14, I was, man, I had a Joshua Tree t-shirt.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And this was when they had just gotten on the scene, and the one thing you knew about them, like, after, like, already digging them, and already they were cool, is... Somebody told me, you know, they're Christian. And I went, right. What? And I was like, oh, thank God. Like, because I wanted to be in a band. And I thought, I was worried about, like, do you have to be a gross person? Because
like a hedonist.
Like, my dad had filled my head with that kind of noise. So I was, when U2 came along, I was like, oh, good. There's a band out there that is not so gross. And, there's a path, I think.
Yeah.
And they're cool. And like, they already had like credibility. Like that was something they weren't wearing on their sleeve, and they were already a good band. And I thought that was the coolest thing on earth. So went to that Christian camp, like took to it. I would occasionally read the Bible when I got back home. At night, it would be my, and I think my parents were kind of going, what is going on? Like maybe he's ballistically going towards it. Like, and after a while, I stopped hanging out with those friends. Mm-hmm. The crush sort of evaporated to whatever. And then I went to high school. And then, like right in the middle of that, I was exposed to pot. I didn't really like start smoking it, but I was like, "Oh, these people are cool too." So a lot of it just had to do with social pressure.
Yeah.
It's always interesting to me to look back and go, like, I could have just kept on going, since it was all to do with being an adolescent, probably that's another thing that drew me to Christianity at such a weird later age was that it was a tonic to fear. Like it meant like, oh, if you went this direction, everything was going to be fine. If you didn't, you were going to go into the seven circles of hell of high school without somebody getting your back.
Bono won't have your back.
Bono, like, he's nowhere near San Antonio.
That's so interesting. Like, it's kind of out of your control a little bit.
Yeah.
It was funny. I had a crush who did you have Cotillion back in Texas?
Mm-hmm.
I took Cotillion for the exact same reasons. Just to follow a crush. My parents were like, really? You going to take Cotillion?
Well, what was Cotillion for you? Like,
that was the one where they teach you basically ballroom dancing and like formal dinner stuff.
Okay. So our Cotillion was similar, but it was probably more insidious for us because we never really knew that there was deliberate adult training going on because it was it was a dance. I knew that there was just an extra dance every year or something like that where you had to dress up in a specific way. And I remember at some point a group of us taking ballroom or like whatever that kind of dancing was.
Yeah.
And to me, it was... And maybe this is the same for you. It was just another thing that our parents got us into. It wasn't like, okay, now I'm being indoctrinated into adulthood. Or like, to me, it was just, we're doing this. Soccer and then doing this. But it felt after a while, once I realized, oh, not everybody that I know is doing this.
Yeah.
You go, oh, this is a club.
And this is the lamest thing I've ever done in my life.
That's
how I did it.
Yeah. Well, there was one year where it was a casual cotillion. Well, I guess casual in the sense of it wasn't formal and it was during the summer. And we walked, like, everyone had, like, an independently, but maybe the parents talked, but all the guys had white pants.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't coats. It was white pants and a polo shirt or light-colored pants.
Uh-huh. And it wasn't even Easter.
Right. Yeah, it was
Totally out of season.
Totally out of season. Appalling, if you really think about it. So you had Cotillion.
Right. And totally followed that for a crush, though.
Yeah.
And just pined after her for a distance.
So did you have to convince your parents to do this? Or?
Yeah, they had the same reaction. Oh, wow. But they were kind of like, oh, cool. Like they were more like, oh, cool. Like, we would have made him do this.
Yeah.
But we don't even have to make him.
Nice.
Yeah. But anyway, getting sidetracked a little bit.
Yeah, your religion was Cotillion for just a little bit.
Totally. My religion has always been love, Joel.
Oh,
and
sweet Joel.
What an unsatisfying religion that has been. That's a really interesting approach that your parents had with, like, yeah, kind of the one foot in. It seems like it maybe worked.
It did, yeah. I laugh about it, but it did. And I took it further. Like, I took it further than they anticipated.
They're getting uncomfortable.
Yeah, I think so. And I remember my brother at one point sitting around. We were sitting around the dinner table. We were probably in middle school.
Uh-huh.
And I was sneaking a prayer in to myself because we never prayed. And I remember my brother, who was like his older brother, and he just had a red phone to anything that I was doing that needed to be made called out.
Uh-huh.
So I remember him just going, "What are you doing?" And I think he was cool about it. Like he didn't go, "You're praying, dude." But he was just like, "What are you doing?" And I felt very self-conscious about it. I was like, "Nothing." And I realized, like, if I have shame about this, then there's something else going on
here. Yeah.
I don't know what it is, but obviously I still want to do this publicly, but as privately as possible. I don't know if I had self-awareness to be like, there's a lesson here. It's just that it's interesting to note that I was trying to do that in my family that was not like so.
Like a Midwestern, like, Protestant thing to do is, like, don't wear your religion too much on your sleeve. Yeah. Just keep it to yourself.
Yeah.
And there's definitely, I think if you are going to, go down the Christian route in your own life, I think that's probably not a bad way to do it. Be like, yeah, I don't need to, like, let everybody know that I'm praying this thing.
Yeah.
So that's but it's interesting that you tied that to shame. I was just picturing you, like, your door closed and your mom knocking, like, "What are you doing in there?"
Shoving the Bible under my bed.
Nothing, Mom.
Nothing. Just, growing up.
Yeah. So was there a point then, because I get, now if you're going, I'm just basing this off context clues.
Sure.
That you go to see the guy that teaches meditation near your place now.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a point where you went from doing secret prayers and being pretty into it to not so much.
There was a point where I
was there, like, a transition period where you kind of, like, fell away from that
Christianity?
Yeah.
It was probably, it's meeting people that, I don't know. It's a good question. I remember I was really close with a friend of mine, and in that same time, middle school, he had no problem telling me he was an atheist, and I thought that was so shocking.
Yeah.
And he was into punk music, and we all formed the same band, and he was sort of fascinating to me. But that's a good question. I don't know if there was ever that moment that I think it's just because I started to, like, the more people I hung out with that were not churchgoers.
Yeah.
Which, just like anything, when you grow up in Texas, the norm is football. The norm is church.
Mm-hmm.
That you eventually find the people that, for me at least, were closer to who my parents were.
Mm.
This is very, I don't know if I've ever talked about this before. My parents, they both were born in Texas, oddly. But they moved, my dad was in the Army, and before they had my brother and I, they had been stationed in Ethiopia.
Mm.
As soon as they got married, they were stationed in Ethiopia for like 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then they moved to Fort Ord, California. They had my brother. Then they moved to Hawaii, where I was born. Then we moved to North Carolina, mm-hmm. and then for like 8 months or maybe a year, mm-hmm. and then we moved to San Antonio. So I'm bringing that up because when I was growing up in San Antonio, everything in our house mm-hmm. was international or from other places.
Right, right.
So I grew up with an awareness that there was an outside. This sounds like I'm a hero. I'm not a hero, but it's like grew up knowing that there was a whole other world out there, and my parents were fascinated by other cultures, and they loved their time in Ethiopia. Really affected them in a positive way of like this. They were immersed in, you know, a military base in Ethiopia, but they really had a great time. It had a big impact on them.
Yeah.
So growing up in Texas, I always knew that I felt weird compared to everybody else. Mm. So eventually I found friends that were much more open-minded, and the more I hung out with those, and I started to want to really feel like I wanted to be either a musician or an actor, and the more people you hang out in that world, the less Christian, in a way, like the less like hardcore Christians you come across.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's so interesting. I had a similar, not with my parents' background, but I don't know. I always felt like an outsider a little bit growing up, and I think hanging out more with like theater kids as I did in middle school and high school, and then continuing through comedy and whatnot. Yeah, there's something that, I mean, to bring it back, I guess, a little bit to improv, it's like people who unlock, not only do I see like these beautiful examples that sort of defy what culture is saying is approved and mm-hmm. what religion is saying is okay. There are people who seem to be living a true, authentic self, and they inspire me to do the same.
Yeah,
and be as authentically me as I possibly can be, yeah. which is a daily challenge for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's meeting people that I feel are unburdened, maybe.
Yeah.
And the more, less burdened with my religious stuff. Cause like, I think that's what it always was. It was, I felt the church that we went to, the Episcopal church, felt like a club. And that's one of the reasons my parents got sort of fed up with it. It was a clicky, environment that they never felt part of. They did. There were definitely nice people there, and we met some great people, but it felt like that whole world was, a scene.
Yeah.
And so there was outsider shame, guilt, like, am I part of this? Am I not? And I didn't want to feel that anymore with anything, or not with religion. So that's another reason why I started to drift towards people that were less burdened with that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And I think that that whole insider outsider, that there's cliques probably in every single church that I can think of, and it's so interesting. Like, I had the weird, unique, I guess, situation of being like the pastor's kid, so people like had to be nice to me and had to include me and like knew who I was, and sometimes I didn't know who they were. Most of the time I did. If anybody's listening, most of the time I knew who you were.
Did you feel pressure as a pastor's son to be?
Yeah, I think more there was. Every now and then there would be like a direct comment, like a direct joke about it, or a direct saying things, not necessarily from my parents, but from other people, you know, expecting me. There's always, when you do have to go to church every week and you're there often middle of the week and you know you're, you know, a very visible kind of member of that.
Sure, yeah.
I think there's a lot of maybe implicit pressure of some sort. But
there's a healthy version of that, I would imagine, right?
Yeah, I mean, it probably made me like, nicer person, probably.
Yeah, yeah.
And it wasn't like all bad. I think one thing, I mean, this is just my own shit that I've dealt with, is like, I think especially coming to LA and coming to comedy and having to sort of make my own path and sort of earn more. Because I felt a little bit, I think, maybe that because I was given so much great love for free, which is what everybody should feel. Everybody should be so lucky to be in that environment that I had.
Mm. Just with your family.
Just my family, but also the church
people. Public, yeah.
Church people, like, just knowing, like, everybody. I wasn't an anonymous kid to everybody. I was like, oh, he's the pastor's kid, but I'm going to, like,
attention.
Yeah, adults were trying to make a relationship with me,
yeah,
even on their own small level, which I'm so glad so many of them did. But then, you know, you come out here and you don't, it's weird being totally anonymous, totally like nobody gives a shit who you are, and you really do have to like earn your keep. Now, that's a great lesson. I'm not complaining about that.
Yeah,
but
it's
I think
like you came out here and became like a shaved head monk, like you starting over, like totally nude.
Right, right.
That's what monks do, right?
That is what they do. Anyway, I got sidetracked from whatever we were originally talking about. But so you kind of...
I'm trying to figure out like...
So you went through high school, you're going, or you weren't?
To church?
Yeah.
No. But high school started, middle school, that's when, and before was the church period, and then, I think that's what happened. It was like, I got into middle school, as if it was like hard to get in. I started middle school.
Mom, I got in.
I knew you could do it, Joel. It was in middle school that I did that weird resurgence.
Gotcha, yeah.
And so it was just before middle school that I got confirmed and all that stuff. But high school, no church. I knew people. We would still go to like, sometimes mom would drag us to a midnight mass before Christmas. Her best friend in the whole world was very religious, and she had a real like deep connection with me because of that, and because of, I think she, that's always something that she and I have shared about. And so nowadays, I just talked to her the other day, my mom's best friend, and she's still like... speaks to me as if I'm still so on board with praying with, you know, and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And so she's very sweet and she loves me, and it's so important to me, but it's whereas I used to be able to kind of like back and forth with it. Now I'm like more accepting. The words are coming to me and I'm like unable to kind of give back without feeling weird. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep, you're describing most Christmases for me.
I'm actually trying to think of when I got into start, or at least started to explore or like study or whatever, look at Zen and Buddhism. And I think it probably was The Art of Happiness, that book that was just flying all around the place.
Oh, I've heard of that one.
The Dalai Lama's.
Oh.
I think it's called The Art of Happiness.
That sounds about right.
It was, you know, it's one of those.
sounds like a Dalai Lama book.
Totally. Yeah. It's like easily bestseller. It's like no question that was going to be a bestseller.
Yeah. Yeah.
My dad got it because he was always succumbing to that kind of bestseller guru type stuff. So I opened it and, you know, I just started to go, well, this makes me feel, I know this makes me feel better. It makes me feel less of all those negative things that I would feel with church. Mm. And so I liked it. There was another weird moment in my life with church where I was living in London for a year, and there was a Catholic church just down the block from where I lived. And I went on a couple of Sundays just to chill. Like during the service.
Yeah.
And it was nice. I love the whole ritual aspect of it. I love the beauty of it. But damn, that priest was like, okay, today's sermon is about respect. And I was like, all right.
Peace.
Peace.
I'm curious if you, I don't know if you have or are planning to have kids anytime.
Yeah, at some point. Yeah.
Do you think you would have the same kind of approach that your parents did with you?
Probably not. It wouldn't be, unless there was a church around that was so liberal, I don't think so. I think I would be open with how I feel, but I also would, I don't necessarily think, because it's just not been in my life anymore, and I think church was still something in my parents' life, like, it was just closer to them, even though they never went to church, or they didn't. They had stopped going to church not that long comparatively. And I it'd be so weird for me all of a sudden take my kids to church.
Yeah, I feel you.
What about you?
You'd funny. I have to.
You'd have to.
I think I don't know what I would do with my kids or not. I don't know what I'm doing myself currently.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I do the past year and... a couple of different impetuses made me want to start this whole podcast, but I did start. I go to a church. I've gone to like a Quaker meeting house, which is pretty cool, pretty like not much in the way of text going on. This is basically, I don't know if you've ever been or know what they're like.
Is there singing?
There's no singing. Hmm. They're basically, and it's a really, it's the most humble religious establishment I've ever seen. It's like just literally just a big room with four quadrants of pews all facing each other, like in a diamond shape, but they're all, so everybody's looking at each other and you're just sitting and there's nothing on the walls, nothing. There's just like a light hanging down and like a fireplace that's just like dammed up because nobody's ever going to use that again. You just sit there and it's essentially group meditation for an hour with the option that anybody can stand up and just start speaking if they want to.
Wow.
Now there's definitely etiquette to it where it's like, don't do it more than once per session.
Oh boy.
And like, let's,
Rick is here tonight.
Yeah, let's wrap it up, please. But it's been really cool. The couple of times I've gone, I could see myself getting back with that environment for sure. Cause it's so simple and they're very like, they're similar to Unitarians where they're just like, there's truth to all the traditions. It doesn't really matter at all what you believe. Now there's more, apparently there's more conservative Quakers out there, which are,
oh, really?
Which are kind of like traditional Christians.
Oh.
But this was a pretty liberal one in Pasadena.
Well, definitely tell you, I mean, I believe there's value in, and that's probably why that I did like go to that Catholic church a couple of times, because I felt it just, it's so good to have some sort of connecting moment ritualistically or, I mean, we talked about meditation earlier, like that's one way to do that, but it's also is, I think there's value in communing.
Yeah. Building community,
building community, coming together, being grateful or, talking about stuff that is really important. It's, and I think there's still, even to the point of Muslim religion, like how often do they pray? Five times a day. So
yeah,
I mean, that's obviously something that's so alien to me, but yet there's part of me that's a little jealous of that moment that they take every day to just stop everything. And it could be meditation is another way of doing it, but they stop everything and thank God.
Right.
Which is pretty cool. Like it's a cool thing to like keep connected to.
Gratitude is so huge, and that's like there's certain themes, I guess, that, you know, certain like spiritual hot topics that I get hooked on for a couple of weeks or a couple months at a time, and that's, gratitude has been one that I've been really trying to recultivate again. It is a practice, like you do some, I think I have to like intentionally put myself in the space. It's usually like when I get in my car on my way to work in the morning, and just trying to like just list off as many things, literally everything I can think of, trying to be thankful, even for the shitty times, because there have been so many shitty times in my life that then became the most transformative periods for me. My biggest growth has undoubtedly come from all of those times when I was the most depressed or in the most fear or whatever. But we don't even have to get that deep. I can just be thankful for the car. I can just be thankful for the road. I can just be thankful that this mug is sitting in front of me and that somebody came up with the idea of a cup thousands of years ago.
Yeah.
You know?
That you're able to walk, that you're, that like there's so much. I think that helps your mind.
Oh, it definitely does.
Yeah.
I think what's different for me now is that now that I'm not saying thank you to a specific God for that, you know, I don't feel indebted per se to anybody, but it's still, I think gratitude has been, I don't know, it makes me happier.
Yeah. I think, I totally, totally agree with you.
So we're about at that time for the fun gimmick of the show, if you're feeling up to it.
Yeah, yeah, sure. There's a series of questions that I'm going to answer, or?
Yeah. Oh, I got a list.
Okay.
We're going to make up our own religion.
Making up our own religion. Okay.
Again, you can.
I started to kind of go, well, because I thought I was going to have to give.
like fill out a Mad Libs or something.
No, like actually like start to talk about like what my religion would be, but this sounds much more easy. You're just going to ask me some questions. I'm going to respond to them.
Yeah, right? I have bullet points of like building a religion.
Great.
And again, this can be like, however
I can take
purpose,
the piss out of it if I want.
Right.
I can also,
this can be something that you want to personally lead and start your cult or whatever.
All right, I'm ready.
So on this new religion. What's our God structure look like? Do we have a monotheistic thing? Is there kind of a no God situation like Buddhism? Is there like a mini God polytheism?
Is polytheism, what is it where I like the Greek and like yeah. the saints, like the amount of people that you could have, like specific jobs.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I love that.
Okay.
So is that polytheistic?
I think that counts as polytheism. Okay. Definitely the Greeks. Yeah. Cool.
Okay.
What would you like the overarching ethos or main takeaway to be?
Hmm.
Like the main philosophical imprint.
Well, we just talked about it, but gratitude is huge on the list. Is there another word besides chill?
Solace.
Thank you.
Gratitude and solace.
Gratitude and solace.
Tight. Okay. What kind of, are there any rules, or is there any sense of sin? Are there things that we can or can't do? Sex, dancing, smoking, whatever, drinking.
This is the part that I'm sure you get a lot of, like, as long as you're, it's, this is like the libertarian portion of
yep.
and with a small L, not the party, just
right.
the small L, where if you're not, hurting anybody, if it's
yep.
all consensual, but it's really more of a therapeutic if you're it's be, getting as close to your authentic self as you can, and some of that stuff like you know, any chemical or whatever is sometimes preventing you from doing that. So authentic self is the goal. So if that allows for experimentation, but not so much that it takes over and interrupts your authentic self.
Cool. Wow, that is not a standard answer.
Okay.
Usually it's don't be a dick.
Don't be a dick, yeah. That's probably what you can reduce it to.
No, but getting
yeah.
into the authentic self, that's
yeah.
next level shit.
Cool.
What kind of, if do we have any kind of holy texts? Is there any kind of like pamphlet or readout or a book or whatever? A magazine,
skywriting. I like books. I like the kind of the bricks and mortarness of
yeah,
it,
yeah.
of having a book. So I don't think it's too long. It is easy to read, and it's really not so. It's probably a page, so it's not a book. So it's like
uh-huh.
no. Like, how could you fit this all in one page? It's one chapter. One chapter of guidelines.
Sweet. Yeah. Just guidelines.
Yeah.
We'll just leave it at that.
Yeah.
On becoming your authentic self. Cool.
Yeah.
Is there any kind of regular, whether it be weekly, monthly, yearly meeting or worship or convention or
mm-hmm.
anything like that?
There's a weekly encouraged meeting. there's no shame in missing it. And then there's a spring and a fall festival.
Sick. I love that. I love a good seasonal festival.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For connected to harvest and all that.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah.
Is there any kind of music at these encouraging
yeah,
meetings?
You gotta dance. Yeah. It's well, yeah, there's music. There's
mandatory dancing.
Yeah. The opposite of Footloose. Yes, I think music should be a real fun, beautiful part of it, and not it should groove. It shouldn't be, some
yeah.
of these softer, easily like tempoed hymns that we grew up with.
Yeah. The stoic shit.
Yeah. Bomb.
Da, da, da,
the music, like I know why that happened. It was so much easier for the people
oh, yeah.
to sing along. It was like every church you could almost see the dot kind of hopping
right.
along the lyrics, you know.
It's like, well, you got to be able to sing this from when you're 5 to
yeah.
95.
Right.
So we got to
but maybe there's like there's that's what that's something to strive for in this religion, is that you start with the basic music, but then like if you become a deacon, that's when you've learned like some of the weirder, more funkier
yeah.
music, and you can dance to that. So, and it's not like, it doesn't take that long to reach that level.
Dude, I was watching this this documentary on it's a long story about the documentary, but basically there was a lot of Pentecostal revivals in it, like from the 70s. Like, actually, there's like legit footage of it happening, and people are just like vamping on these like chord, like these same little chord structure. It sounds like a kind of a stereotypical what you think of as gospel music, like dun 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 dun. But it was fucking hot.
Did you see
raging?
That's awesome. I love that kind of music. And did you see that when the Cavs won, somebody threw in some of that music for when LeBron was talking right after he won, and they just started slipping in some of that music.
Oh no, I missed that.
Where I'll send the link to you, or maybe you can post it to your fans. But like, it is, it's so perfect because he. He's not, like, when you listen to him, there's no rhythm to it. It's just honest. He's just saying what's coming to his mind. Uh-huh. And then he just yells, Cleveland. But they structure the music so that it's, and it's not like it's done by, like,
like
a synth and, like, everything else. So it's not, like, huge. But it's perfectly synced with, it's like he's, you know, just, like, stalking back and forth on
right,
it.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And just, and the crowd is going nuts. So. Just
preaching the word of
preaching
Cleveland.
Preaching the word of Cleveland, of we just won a game.
The land.
Yeah.
Awesome. I love that. Yeah. Is there any sense of prayer or meditation in this?
Yeah, lots
this,
of it.
Lots.
Mostly meditation.
Mostly meditation. Cool.
Yeah.
Is there any, like our Presbyterian time for confession or whatever, is there any sense of a moment of repentance or apologizing or
yeah, I think it's like you were saying before, it's acknowledging that there you are a continuously developing organism and that you can edit that out. That you can you acknowledge mistakes but you let them go. I think that's key. You let them go at that same moment.
Cool. Is there any, well, okay, this is always the part where things get a little shady in religion.
Yeah.
Is there, what do we do with money? Are we collecting money at all? Are we encouraging donations? Is there a membership fee?
I never have a problem with that.
Interesting.
It's weird. I think it's because of doing theater that and I'm sure you get this ethic after a while, which is you got to pay for stuff.
If you like, got to keep the lights on.
Got to keep the lights on.
Somebody's got to manage all of this stuff if it's big enough.
But under the same ethic of UCB, the prices are low. That they are as low as they can be to get more people there. So it doesn't become a financial burden. And it's pay what you can. So, a suggested donation of $5 is probably what it's going to be.
Cool. Right on. Where do we meet? What's the setting?
It'd be great if for some reason it was always at a river.
the LA River. I hope.
Yeah. Do the best you can. But it'd be great if it was it was connected to outdoors in some way, whether it's like you could hear the wind. You can hear this was always something nice to, like, when I would take a yoga class and it would be like this big spiritual experience. I liked, and I know some people probably wouldn't, but when you start to hear traffic, it was kind of nice for me that it connected me to the outside world. But
yeah,
so that you're not listening to air conditioning, I think it's better to listen to the world out there.
Cool, that's awesome. All right, so we kind of already answered, like, because we have our festivals, so that's good with our community.
We could talk about that more.
Yeah, so like what kind do we have any extra community building events?
I do like the communal building of barns that the Amish do.
Ooh, yeah.
And I think building is very healthy for the community to do. I also the same as picking up trash or just improving the look of the community. I don't know if
the local environment.
The local environment, yeah. I think that just improves the psyche and it helps people to work together.
Cool. So like a monthly barn build.
Yeah, monthly barn build or like a trash cleanup.
Cool. What kind of, if any, youth group or Sunday school, any kind of special programming for kids?
Joe, that stuff just has to be a bunch of games. It's just games.
I cannot impress upon you.
This is the most important thing, is you have kids play and think of this as not in a manipulative way, but this is a fun thing, that this is so that it's a positive thing. I'm not, I immediately bristle at lesson time for...
Yeah.
Now that stuff can be incorporated, but it's more about the kids being able to wear whatever they want.
Thank you. Thank you.
Wear play clothes and be outside and goof around.
I wonder how many people would still be religious if they could have just worn whatever they wanted as kids. If I could have just shown up in my U2 shirt.
I wonder if that's, well, you'd know more than I do, but like since like nothing's formal anymore.
I don't think so. Definitely. Well, we're also skewed a little bit by being in LA.
Yeah.
And like definitely no churches out here are formal.
Yeah.
I mean, there's like the older people are in within even a given church. They tend to want to dress
lots of
up
belts.
More.
Yeah. Lots of belts.
But, yeah.
Where did you grow up?
North Carolina.
Well, what city?
Well, I grew up in a small town called Newton, which is, just north of Charlotte. And then I went to Chapel Hill college, but, yeah, I mean, it was pretty, we were definitely dressing up every week for church.
That we lived in Fayetteville for that year in North Carolina. Did we talk about that?
You said you moved there briefly. That makes sense. That's where the military base is. I was actually born in a little town, Red Springs. It's like in the middle of nowhere.
Okay.
I probably wouldn't have even ever
interacted
with that. But
story about like connecting to my parents' journey. So they went Ethiopia, Fort Ord, California, Hawaii, and then Fayetteville was their city. And
beautiful Fayetteville.
Yeah, and they drove. So it was my parents and my brother and I, and we were like one and two, one and three, and or two and four. And we drove from California to Fayetteville and just leaving Hawaii. And
this
was nothing to me, but my mom, my parents were in the front, and we got into North Carolina, but mom told me about this later. Dad told me about this, that there was a billboard sign saying the KKK welcomes you to North Carolina. And this was in, this was in 74. and my mom, I think, started crying. I think that's what the story goes. She
I
just
mean, to go from Hawaii to that.
To that.
Oh, dear Lord. Your poor mom.
Yeah, she was like just full of exciting ports of call, and then she went to the KKK welcomes you.
Yeah. Well, man, I haven't seen that billboard, thank God.
Yeah, maybe that's done.
Hopefully. Is there any kind of mission work or any other kind of service with this?
Probably.
I mean, it's similar to like trash cleanup stuff. Yeah.
And yeah, I love, it's one of the things I love about the Catholic religion is the focus on poverty. That's one thing they do really.
Gotta get
I love
those
that
works.
Priority.
Yeah.
But I don't know how bad, that's just the idea of it. I like the Catholic religion doing it. I don't know to what degree if they're, making it worse, but I do think that's a good priority for any religion.
Okay, cool. Is there any kind of outreach or marketing or evangelism, anything like that?
I don't think so. I think it has to attract, I think, as opposed to... Yeah.
It's very confident.
Yeah, yeah. I suppose. As opposed to... I see what you mean, outreach. Well, even with... it's maybe what I'm saying about the Catholic religion, which I am not an expert on. And so any of the stuff that I've said on this podcast, I am not an expert
on
any of it.
Me too, by the way.
So, I wouldn't be promoting any religion in any sort of, public works sort of connection. So it would always be just the charity. I don't think there would be door-to-door people. I don't think there'd be any sort of TV show.
Mm-hmm.
So no, I guess.
Cool. Now, often the hardest part to wrap it all up.
Yeah. And, what's the name?
Yeah. And keeping in mind with what we've talked about.
Yeah. Authentic community.
Boom.
I guess it's not, it doesn't sound like Zen. It's like two words that we already know, but the authentic community church.
Well, if it was like a title that sounded like Zen, it would just be like The Authentic or something.
The Authentic, yeah. Sounds
like it's like a
cult. That's a cult now, yeah.
Yeah.
The AC, the authentic community.
There you go.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, we did it.
That's it. We're done.
That's it. Okay. Thanks so much for coming over. This was great.
You're very welcome. It was a delight to talk about this stuff with you. Thanks.
That's it. That's the show, y'all. Once again, thanks so much to Joel Spence for coming out and teaching me lots of improv. And also, you can check him out on boondoggleabc.com. Check out this show on Facebook, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and check yourselves out, because if you do, you'll find something that's really worthy of love. Take care, y'all. Bye.
What's a Creative Podcast Network?